This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Well, he went down to dinner in his Sunday best. Excitable boy, they all said. And he put the pot roast all over his chest. Excitable boy, they all said. Well, he's just an excitable boy.
Hi folks, Bob Main here. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Show. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. This is episode number 111, to be exact, coming to you from my studio on wheels, my Honda Accord, as I'm driving down the freeway. Don't worry, folks, I'm driving safe, but I'm also podcasting and taking advantage of some windshield time. If you are a relatively new listener, I just want to let you know right up front, this is a practical show. I'm just an ordinary guy. I'm not ex-law enforcement. I'm not ex-military, not a gunsmith or a firearms trainer or a CCW instructor. I'm just a guy that likes to shoot, and I believe very strongly that we should carry guns for protection. It is our constitutional right that must not be taken away from us. So I'm just a Yankee with a microphone, born in New York City, raised in Wisconsin, but now I live in the great gun-friendly state of Wisconsin. Enough about me, though. This show is going to be about training. I've got an excellent interview coming up. I really think you're going to enjoy, and I got a surprise announcement to talk to you about. I do want to cover some listener feedback, though. You guys send me a lot of comments, and I very much appreciate that. Some of you have been posting some things on the Gun Rights Radio Network forum. And by the way, I just want to say, if you have not become a member of the GRRN, stands for Gun Rights Radio Network, please get on their forum. There's a lot of knowledgeable people on there, and you can find this show on there. You can find a lot of great gun-related podcasts on the Gun Rights Radio Network. Check them out. I also want to go ahead real quickly, give out the website for this show, www.handgunworld.com, and my email address if you'd like to send me some comments, as a lot of folks have done, which I'm going to cover shortly, bob@handgunworld.com. Hey, you know what? One more thing. I uploaded a new YouTube video the other day. Check that out. I'm talking about my car PM9, which I really have not done a YouTube video on, and I'm also talking about my modified Uncle Mike's holster. I know, it's an Uncle Mike's. I know that those sometimes aren't very well thought of, but I made some pretty cool modifications to mine, and it works. It just flat out works, folks. That's all I'm going to say about that. But check it out. It's a YouTube video I think you're going to enjoy. And last but not least, don't forget to check me out on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. You can just search Handgun World Show on all of those venues, and you should be able to connect with me. Okay, well, let's get into some listener feedback. Again, keep the comments coming, folks. I very much appreciate that. I just gave you my email address on how to send them to me. So the first one that I want to cover comes from Maladin. Remember Maladin from the show that I recently did a few weeks back, where I interviewed him and Josh after a shooting match that we did in Dallas? Well, he got his wife into competition shooting, which I think is fantastic. So first of all, Maladin, I want to congratulate you. Thanks. He just sent me an email saying that she used this Glock 19 to compete in the personal protection match that's done once a month at Dallas Pistol Club. She did pretty well, placed 38th out of 41 shooters. Not bad for the first time. Here's what I like. I just like the fact that Maladin has finally convinced his wife to go out there and shoot with him. So, you know what? This is great. I mean, shooting should be a family sport. I've said that many times, and I strongly believe in it. When family gets together and they go out and they shoot, it's a bonding experience, folks. It is. And I'm glad to see women getting out there and shooting. This is not just a guy's sport. And by the way, Maladin is from Serbia. All right, the next email I want to cover is from Julian. And basically, he was just emailing me to let me know that he's been having a hard time downloading some of my older podcasts. And yes, I know that that is an issue. I am working on that. I'm trying to figure out what the problem is. I'm trying to reset iTunes. so that whenever you pull up my show in iTunes, you should be able to see all 111 episodes there. I'm trying to fix that. Julian, hang on. Hopefully here within a few days, I'll have that fixed. Now, next, Brian sent me an email from Connecticut. And he basically just wanted to say that he wants me to do a review on the Ruger SR9C 9mm compact. He said he went to a range, tried it out, shot very well with it. It's a good gun, Brian, and you know what? I'm going to try to do a review on the Ruger SR9. If you've been listening to my show long enough, you know that I don't like to review guns that I either don't own or have not shot. And so I'm going to try to get to a range. There's a range locally near me in the Dallas area that I know that has one of those. So I'll try to get over there. There's actually two or three guns I want to rent and do a review. If you haven't listened to my Kimber Solo Carry review, I did that about a month ago or so. I had a chance to shoot one of those things already at one of my favorite indoor ranges here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So go back and listen to that, and let me know what you think of that one, too. I also want to mention that Brian sent me a list of the guns that he went to rent. And he shot a Walther PPK, he shot a Smith & Wesson Bodyguard 380, he shot a Ruger LC9, a Walther PPS 9mm, a Beretta PX4 subcompact, a Glock 19 Generation 3, a Ruger SR9C, a Springfield XD9 subcompact, a Springfield XD45 ACP compact. Obviously, it looks like he's going and renting a bunch of carry guns. I love getting emails like this, and I'll tell you why. Brian from Connecticut seems to be doing his homework. He's going out, and he's renting a lot of guns. I bet he's doing this before he goes out and purchases one. Am I right, Brian? Shoot me an email. Let me know if I got that right. This is good. See, this is what I strongly encourage. Go to the range and rent them. It's cheaper to rent guns than it is to make a lousy purchase and end up with a gun that you hate. And then you have to try to sell it and possibly take a loss on it. Good job, Brian. Thanks for sending me that. Now, this next email comes from Miko. I think Miko's the guy from Finland that sent me a nice email right after I did that that podcast on Finnish Mosin Nagants and stuff like that. He wanted to disagree with me on a couple things from my survival guns episode. He feels that a one- or two-barreled shotgun is an outdated design, and they're pretty much only good as shotguns to be sawed off. He said I'd be better off getting a Remington 870 or a Mossberg 500, and I do have a Remington 870 12-gauge, phenomenal gun. I have a Remington 870 Wingmaster with just a beautiful stock on it. It's in great condition. I found this thing used for $350. It came with an extra barrel, and I don't think the previous owner hardly ever shot the thing. It was in pristine condition. I called Remington. I had them run the serial number. They said it was built in 1993. It's a fantastic gun. So I got to go ahead and say that, Miko, yeah, I agree. You know, I was talking about double-action shotguns in that survival gun episode. I do kind of like those double barrel, not double action. I like those double barreled coach guns because they're so short and light. But yes, a semi-automatic or a pump is a better design, probably from a home defense or a property defense standpoint. So yes, if you're trying to figure out what kind of a shotgun should you get, I highly recommend the Remington 870. I just like it. Mossbergs are fantastic too. And Miko also wanted to include in this email that he said that the shotguns with the tubular magazines have a lot of advantages because you can constantly feed the magazine, you can constantly keep it topped off with ammo, and it's also easy to change out ammo. That is true, and that's why I like it from a survival or a defense standpoint, because it's real easy to constantly keep that gun tied off. You can do the same thing, topped off, excuse me, you can do the same thing with a semi-auto shotgun as well. As opposed to, it's a little bit tougher to do that. In fact, almost impossible to do that with a double barrel side-by-side or an over-under. He also wanted to say, as for caliber, he'd recommend going with a 12-gauge. I talked about a 20-gauge shotgun as being a good survival gun in that episode. Now, the reason I brought that up, because actually, you know, Miko, thanks for correcting me on that. I own a 12-gauge. I don't own a 20-gauge. My 12-gauge is my all-around shotgun. It's my defense shotgun, it's my hunting shotgun, and it's my survival defense tool. You know, I got to say that one of the reasons why I brought up a 20 gauge is because for some shooters, and you know, you got to think about a survival situation, a preparedness situation, okay? The crap has hit the fan. A lot of people can shoot the 20 gauge that cannot shoot the 12 gauge, especially kids, especially smaller people, small females, smaller males. It's easier for them to shoot the 12 gauge and, excuse me, shoot the 20 gauge. And folks, a 20 gauge shotgun loaded with some good double-aught buck or even number one buckshot has about four times the stopping power of a 45 ACP handgun, roughly. Again, I'm not a ballistics expert, folks, but you know, it's just some research that I've been doing. Folks, it'll get the job done. 20 gauge is nothing to shake a stick at, okay? But Miko, good points. Thanks for sending that email to me. I very much appreciate that. Britt from Arkansas sent me an interesting. He had three questions he wanted to ask me, so I'll do my best, Britt. First of all, he complimented me on my show. Thank you very much. And he also wanted to remind me that the Taurus 24/7 9mm compact is an excellent gun, and he wanted me to give it a try. You know, that's one of the guns that I want to rent. I've never spent a lot of trigger time shooting a Taurus 9mm. Scott in Dallas met me at a recent match at Dallas Pistol Club. I'm pretty sure it was Real World Gun competition match, and he let me, when the match was over, shoot his 24/7 Taurus. Excellent guns. That's only the second time, I believe. I think it's the second time that I've shot one of those, but I've never had a lot of trigger time with one, so that's one that I think I'm going to try to run 100 rounds through it and let you know what I think. But Britt's first question that I want to try to answer is, he says, hey, Bob, I know you're not much of an expert on ballistics and stuff. Well, you know, you got that right, Britt. But he says, how much difference do you think there is in performance between typical hollow points and the Corban DPX loads that I like to talk about so much? So let me try the best I can to answer that. The reason I like to carry Corban DPX, I really love the Barnes X bullet. It's a solid copper bullet, and if you ever look at one of those, it has a very, very deep cavity, and they very reliably expand. And I've read a lot of ballistics testing, and those rounds being shot out of short-barreled guns seem to work pretty well, too. And, you know, folks, I consider my Glock 19 a short-barrel gun. Even though it's a 4-inch barrel, it's still kind of short. And I often carry my Car PM9. That's a real short barrel on that. The solid copper bullet supposedly gives you very, very good penetration. Now, I've shot these things. I've tested them. I got to say they're... You know what? They're just barely enough better than the other ones that I've tried to make it worth my while. Here's the thing. Corban's quality control is outstanding. I've never had a failure of any kind with any of the Corban DPX. The solid copper bullet, the bullet design, and the fact that it just flat out works, it gives you a combination of penetration and expansion, and that's what you want. So, Britt, I hope I'm answering your question. I just think that they're a tad bit better. They're worth the money. I'm not saying that a Speer Gold Dot is not good. I'm not saying Federal Hydro Shocks are not good or Corban Powerball or any of those. I mean, you know, ammunition is so good these days. It's really hard to go wrong, I think, with any of these. I just like the Corban DPX for the reasons that I've mentioned. His second question is, he's heard me talk about my Mini 14. He wanted to know, what do I use it for? That's strictly a self-defense gun. Plain and simple, that's exactly what I use it for. Okay, and Britt's third question was really a survival preparedness question, because he listens to my other show, Today's Survival Show. He wanted to know of a good resource for getting inexpensive food for your food storage survival pantry. Hey, Britt, get on Google and just Google Mountain House. Any of the foods by Mountain House are excellent. I'll try to send you an email with a link to their website as well. So thanks for the questions, Britt. The next one, let's see, comes from Ryan. And he didn't put down what city or what state he's from, but that's okay. He wanted to know what my thoughts were on Generation 3 versus Generation 4 Glock 19s. There's another question that he asks, too, but let me address that one first. You know, it's a tough one. My Generation 3 Glock 19s have just, they've served me well. I just absolutely love them. The Generation 4 has some distinct advantages. I got to be up front. I have not shot a Gen 4 Glock 19. So I'm going to kind of break one of my rules here, and I'm going to inject an opinion or a little bit of a review on a gun that I haven't shot. Not sure if I should do this, but I'm going to do it, Brian, because you've asked me this question. Here's what I like about the Gen 4 Glock 19. I really like the magazine release button. I've had a chance to play around with the Gen 4 Glock 19. I know a Glock armorer that's let me spend a lot of time, you know, dry firing that and manipulating it. Boy, I sure like the way, I like the design on the magazine release button. That's excellent. I love the grip. I think the grip is excellent. The texturing is good. The one I had a chance to play with did not have any of the back straps put on it. So it was just the regular grip without any back straps. It's a little bit smaller than a standard Generation 3 grip that fits my hand absolutely perfectly. So I think that's a big plus. Now, I've heard of a few challenges out there with the recoil spring and guide rod assemblies on the Gen 4. I don't know if Glock has that figured out or not, or has that corrected. I've read some stuff on the internet, some reviews, and you know, folks, hey, you know, you got to take the stuff that you hear from the internet commandos out there. You got to take some of that with a grain of salt, don't you? Because I firmly believe there's people out there on the internet posting stuff that, and they have no clue what they're talking about, and they've never even tried the gun that they're pontificating about on the internet. However, I have heard from some very reliable people that there are some challenges with that recoil spring and guide rod. I've also heard that they've got that fixed. So I don't know. That's about all I want to say on this right now, Ryan, until I've had a chance to shoot and test out a Glock Gen 4, which I think I'll try on my next trip to the rental gun range. Okay, now Ryan's question also, he had another question wanting to know whether he should get a Gen 4 Glock or get a Gen 3 Glock and have the grip reduction done like I had on one of my Gen 3 Glocks. Yeah, you guys have heard me talk about it. GripReductions.com, Dale Hunnicutt in Houston, does fantastic work. And I did a YouTube video on this. You can go to my YouTube channel. You can actually see the gun. I had him do a grip reduction on it. He flattened out the back strap, took the hump off of the back. He left the finger grooves on, put some real nice carry texture on there that doesn't dig into your skin. Put a nice little, very well done and tastefully done beaver tail. And you know what? He adds the same kind of polymer material to it that Glock uses, and he takes it off where it needs to be taken off, and ooh, just fits my hand real well. So Ryan's question is, should he get a Gen 4? Or should he get a Gen 3 and have the grip shaped to fit his hand? And I know some of you are thinking, right? Some of you are thinking, just tell him to get a Smith & Wesson M&P or an XD. I can guarantee you some of you are thinking that, aren't you? But he's probably like me. He wants that legendary Glock reliability. He wants the availability of parts and the availability of holsters and the ease of use. And all that, he wants all the benefits from the simplicity of a Glock. That's probably where you're going with this, right, Ryan? If I'm guessing, I think I'm probably guessing fairly accurately. So let me answer your question. I think I would say if I was in your shoes, especially if you don't already own a Glock, I would get the Gen 4. However, what you might want to do is get to a rental range and run a couple of hundred rounds through that. Ask them if it's the version with the newer recoil spring assembly. I think the slide's even different. I think Glock had to make some modifications to the slide where the recoil guide rod fits into the slide. I think they had to modify that, and I think it's a completely different type of a recoil spring guide rod. Some of you Glock armorer experts out there, if I'm not correct about this, please don't hesitate to get on the forum or send me a comment and correct me. As long as it runs for you, Ryan, I would get the Generation 4. Glocks are reliable pistols. Glock will make it right if it's not. I think Glock's had plenty of time now to get some of the bugs worked out. That's a tough call, but I'm going to go ahead and give you my suggestion, and that's it. And now I'm kind of nervous because now if he goes out and buys that Gen 4 Glock and it doesn't work, then I may get blamed for it. So, oh well. You know, that's, I guess it's one of the risks you take when you do podcasts. And when, you know, folks, I'm not afraid to throw out my opinion. So there it is. The next email I want to share with you. I'm really excited about this one, folks. Alex from High Noon Holsters. I think Alex is either the owner or general manager of High Noon Holsters. He saw my review of one of his holsters on my YouTube channel, and he's sending me a couple of his Public Secret holsters for review. He's sending me one for the Glock 19 and one for my Kar PM9. I'm so excited about this. James Kimmerly, who I've had on this show many times, talking about shooting and stuff, he got a Public Secret holster for his Beretta PX4 subcompact. I was quite impressed. I had only seen pictures of the Public Secret before seeing James's holster. So I'm excited. I'm getting two of these for myself, and I'm definitely going to do a review on them. Here's what I'm going to do. My plan is to carry my pistols in these holsters for at least a couple of weeks. I want to at least wear them for a couple of weeks before I give you guys my thoughts on them. I'll do a lot of dry fire practice. I'm going to do a lot of, you know, drawing and reholstering and so forth and see how they work out. But I'll do both a YouTube video and a podcast on it. And with any luck, I might be able to get Alex to come on this show. Stay tuned. Okay, next up, a guy named Mel sent me an email saying that he's been having a hard time downloading my show from iTunes. Really? I tested it yesterday, downloading my own show. Seems to be downloading fine. Are any of you having any problems downloading my show? If you are, let me know. I know there's a challenge with the older episodes, and I'm trying to get that fixed. But let me know if you're having any problems with it. Now, this next comment I want to address actually was posted on my YouTube channel. It was posted about one of my YouTube videos, the review that I did on my Kar P380. The guy who posted this is asking me if I've ever had any problems with Corban DPX in my Kar P380. He said that he had one light strike fire in the first 20 rounds of shooting Corban DPX through his Kar P380. I've never had that problem, sir. He wanted to know if he should blame it on a not-yet-broken-in gun or if there's an ammo issue. Boy, that's a tough one. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know if a gun that's not broken in well enough would cause a light primer strike. I got to believe that that's probably ammo-related, I would think. But I don't know. I don't know what to answer. Can somebody help me out with that? Do any of you reloaders or anybody that might have this P380, I've never had that. I've run a little over 1,200 rounds through my P380 and about 200 rounds of Corban DPX. And, sir, I have not had that problem. So maybe somebody can help me out with that. And I think his name is Joe, so I need to try to get back to him on that. Okay, next, another guy named Joe sent me an email complimenting me on my show. Thank you very much, Joe. Says he wants to see me do more shows on used guns and police trade-ins. That, sir, is an excellent idea. You are correct. I need to do more on used guns. He said he recently got a Smith & Wesson 5906 and a Dan Wesson 357 barely used, both of them for $550. Woo, that's a smoking deal. And he says he thinks that used guns are just an excellent opportunity out there, and that he doesn't really see the need in buying new guns anymore. And, you know, I want to say that's a very good point. There are so many used guns out there that have barely been shot by their previous owners. Even some former law enforcement guns out there that their previous owners just didn't shoot much. Kind of a sad thought to think about, huh? The law enforcement folks out there not shooting. But, hey, it's a fact. Especially if the gun was owned by a private citizen, it probably didn't get shot much either. There are some that are very well used. I'll tell you what, folks, if you buy one, excuse me, a little interruption there. If you buy one of my guns used, you're going to buy a very well used gun. But I also take care of my guns. But here's what happens. A lot of people buy a gun. Maybe they shoot two boxes of ammo through it, and that's it. And then they decide they don't like it. And it's because they didn't do their homework. They didn't rent a bunch of guns before they made the purchase. They didn't research their purchase. Maybe they really didn't understand what they wanted when they bought the handgun. Or maybe somebody talked them into buying that gun, and they were listening too much to the guy's opinion who was selling them the gun, and they didn't go enough by their own personal experiences from renting it. So they buy this gun, invest a lot of money into it, go to the range, shoot two boxes of ammo, and they go, ugh, I hate it. Now they're stuck with it. So what do? They put it up for sale. Now you get to buy a barely used gun. They've probably only had 50 to 100 rounds shot through them. And any gun that's had a low round count like that is going to be in good shape. And sometimes you get to be the benefactor of somebody else's stupid mistake, right? And guess what? That's what happens. So, yeah, I got to say, Joe, you're right. I'm going to do some more on used guns. Stay tuned to the show, because coming up here in the relatively near future, I think I am going to gather some information. There's a source I want to talk to, maybe even put together an interview and do some more on used guns, especially guns like Glocks, M&Ps, and XDs. You can get a lot of good deals on buying those used. Also, used revolvers. You know, I mean, revolvers are so rugged that, you know, unless somebody's really screwed up, just make sure that the timing of the revolver is in good shape, and I think you're going to be all right. You know, if you're nervous about buying a used gun, take somebody that knows a lot about used guns with you to make the purchase. Okay, and last but not least, Jim from Klein, Texas, sent me an email, wanted to tell me that Tactical Response is going to be teaching their fighting pistol class in Texas in April, and he says he hopes to see me there. I probably won't get a chance to take that one, Jim. I do want to take Fighting Pistol with James Yeager's organization, Tactical Response. I think I'm going to probably have to wait till the fall. And the reason I'm going to have to wait, you will hear about coming up in the second segment of this show. I've got a special guest that I'm going to interview. Okay, I think that's, oh, you know what? That's not it. There's one more. Sorry, folks. But I want to get to all these emails. See, folks, I like to try to answer your emails and your comments on the air here on this show. If I have forgotten your email, if you sent me something and I have forgotten to cover it, do me a favor. Remind me that I didn't cover it. Okay? I've been getting a lot of emails lately, and I'm doing the best I can to catch up. Glenn sent me an interesting email. He said he recently bought a Glock 32. Which is the compact version of the Glock N357 SIG. Now, he says, I had a Glock 23, which is the same frame as a Glock 32, and he almost bought the Glock 33, which is the subcompact 357 SIG, but he decided to get the 32 instead, which is the compact size, a little bit larger, because he could stick to the same holsters and so forth, and basically the same type of gun and the same feel of gun, but just a different caliber. Says it's the best choice he's ever made. He's had it over a year now, and he has no regrets. And he's, by the way, you want to remind me, he's not a Glock snob. He just happens to like that gun. And, hey, Glenn, you know what? Great choice. I'm glad. And, you know, look, the Glock 32 is a fantastic gun, and I just might get one of those these days because I'm just enamored with that 357 SIG caliber. Don't know why. I just like it. Do you still have that Glock 23, Glenn? I don't know if you know this, but you could have just purchased a different barrel for your Glock 23, which is 40 caliber, and converted that to a Glock 32 just by a barrel change. You wouldn't have to do anything else to the gun. There's aftermarket Glock barrels, and I think, if I'm not even mistaken, I think Glock sells a 357 SIG barrel for a Glock Model 23. I could be wrong on that, but I know that there's plenty of aftermarket manufacturers that sell very good barrels. So I don't know if you could have done that, Glenn, but maybe you just wanted to get another pistol just for the sake of getting another pistol, and I got to say, that's good too. Nothing wrong with that, right? Okay, so that wraps up the email. Sorry it took so long first, folks. Before I get to the main topic and the interview, let me go ahead and set this up for you. I just want to say that training is so important. And I got an email from Scott from the Gun Rights Radio Network forums telling me that he had taken the lead and he had finally arranged for a nice training class to come to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So I'm going to speak to my Dallas area listeners right now and people that are within a short drive of Dallas. Close range gunfighting taught by Suarez International. Gabe Suarez's company, is coming to North Texas, and I'm stoked. I took this class last summer. I did a podcast, two podcasts on it, close-range gunfighting. John Payne is going to be the instructor. He is a Suarez International Staff instructor. I am going to be there, folks. It's May 28th and 29th. Yes, it's on Memorial Day weekend. Fortunately, my wife and I don't have any special plans on Memorial Day weekend. And guess what? I got a great wife. She's okayed me to go shoot for 2 days on Memorial Day weekend. Whew, I'm stoked about that. I'm going to have to figure out some way to reward her for that wonderful decision she made. It pays to have good, supportive spouses when you do this sort of thing. You know what I mean? So, coming up shortly, I did a nice interview with John Payne, who is going to teach that class. He's going to be on the show here in just a minute. This was pre-recorded last week. But we're going to talk about the importance of training, and he's going to tell you about what he's going to teach in close-range gunfighting. All I can tell you, folks, is it's an excellent self-defense class. Gabe Suarez is a top-tier instructor. All of the instructors that he teaches, the instructors that he employs, they are good teachers. They're very talented people. And I'm going to repeat this class, folks. Repetition is the mother of learning. Even though I've already gone through this class, I know I need more practice. I know I need to get this training again. It's not going to hurt me to repeat it. I guarantee you I will learn something from it, and it's going to be here in the greater Dallas area. I will put a link in the show notes for all the exact details of the class. Click on that link. It'll take you straight to SI's website. You'll get a complete course description and a location, date, time, fee, and everything. And so, without wasting any more time, here comes a quick little announcement from GunFacts.info and the Gun Rights Radio Network. And on the other side of the announcement, I'll have John Payne, Suarez International Staff Instructor, talking about close-range gunfighting and the upcoming class. Don't go away.
It was one of the worst mass murders committed by a single person. It happened down south. A lunatic killed 27 people, including his own mother, in a single pass. The killer used a six-shot revolver and a knife. Mass murderers find whatever tools they need, and those tools don't need to be sporting rifles or high-capacity clips. A slow, reloading revolver is all this fellow needed. Banning clips will not prevent a madman's massacre. But that doesn't matter to the gun control industry, who thinks inanimate objects are evil, but ignore the deranged people who misuse them. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit GunFacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, everybody. Well, for the main topic of this show, I have another interview. And as most of you know, I like to bring people on this show that know more than me. And today I've done just that. I've got John Payne, who is a staff instructor at Suarez International. And as most of you know, I've taken two of their courses, most recently close range gunfighting. How you doing, John?
Oh, I'm doing excellent, Bob. Nice to be here.
Yeah, well, good. Thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate that a lot. I just want to tell all the listeners that close-range gunfighting is coming to North Texas, and there's been a lot of people who have been emailing me, asking me when there was going to be a good training class coming in. Not that there aren't other good courses, but I happen to know the methodology that Suarez International teaches, at least for this class. And so, John, I'm happy you're coming. I'm glad I was able to put it together. I'm glad that Scott from the forum took the lead and arranged this. Are you looking forward to it?
Oh, most definitely, most definitely. For me, this is something that I've been looking forward to for a long time.
Good. Well, folks, John's going to be the instructor for this class, and it's called Close Range Gunfighting. John, why don't you give everybody kind of a brief synopsis of what's covered in the class?
Well, close range gunfighting, it starts with your fundamentals. even so much as what people call modern technique. We start out readdressing your stance, your grip, side alignment, sight picture, breath control, trigger press, trigger reset, you know, how to make that perfect shot. Once we've established that you have that information and you're able to perform that, then we get into something that is something that I think is really outside what's normally taught in most schools, and not just most private schools, but as far as law enforcement training and even military training, because we're talking about really different aspects of the fight.
Right.
Law enforcement and the military train for what I would call a proactive situation. At SWORS International, the majority of our students are civilians. And as a civilian and a CHL holder myself, if an incident does occur, it's going to be more than likely for me a reactive situation.
Right.
The last thing that I want to do is stay in one place and attract the bad guy's bullets towards me.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
So what we do is we begin to incorporate dynamic movement, getting off the X, X being a bad place to be. Mm-hmm. You know, getting out of the bullet funnel, so to speak. For years, just a little bit of background on myself, I grew up around firearms. I grew up listening to my grandfather, who was raised during the Depression, and
right.
Listening to his stories, it's almost the quintessential grandpa telling you how he walked to school in the snow uphill both ways type thing, you know?
Oh, yeah. Man. I've heard that before.
But Pawpaw had a lot of good stories, and I soaked the stuff up. But what really got me was when he was growing up, he had absolutely nothing. You know, they grew up in a depression. A lot of times, what they had to eat is what he took as far as wild game.
Mm-hmm.
And the outdoors and being self-sufficient, it really appealed to me as a young man. And then when I got a little bit older, I decided I wanted to serve my country, and I joined the Air Force as a street policeman. And that's the first time that I had a modern centerfire rifle in my hands. I thought, wow, all the stuff that we're going through here, I'm learning how to hold a rifle, you know, how to align my sights. But we always engage our targets from a stationary position.
Right.
Even when we got into handguns, which my first issue sidearm was a Smith & Wesson Model 15 38 Special Revolver. Many people would know it as the combat masterpiece. It still is a masterpiece, in my opinion.
Yes, it is.
The goal of every training session that I had at the time was to stand and deliver shooting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, front sight, center of mass shots. It really didn't come all together for me until I attended my first SWORS International class, which was the excellent terrorist interdiction and active shooter interdiction class.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just watching Mr. SWORS engage a target on a full run and get solid hits, and it's like a little light went off in my head. So it is possible to move and get solid hits.
Yeah, it is. And I'm glad you brought that up. Sorry to interrupt you. I'm glad you brought that up, because that was the most important thing that I got from the very first SWORS International class I took, which was defensive pistol. And then it got enhanced even more when I took close-range gunfighting, shooting on the move. And people who have been listening to my show for a long time, they know that I've been a big advocate of shooting on the move and also shooting moving targets, because how many of us are going to stand there and let the bad guy shoot at us and stand stationary? It doesn't make a lot of sense, does it?
No, not at all. Not at all. Especially when you look at the dynamic of how fast this occurs and how close it happens.
Right.
You can't stand still and trade licks with somebody. You know, if I have a bad guy engaging me and I beat him to the draw and I fire a split second before he does, but we both get shots off and I hit him first, he still hits me. Have I won the gunfight? I don't think so.
No, you haven't.
The idea is not to get hit.
That's correct. And you're going to cover that in the class. You're going to teach people how not to get hit in the class, aren't you?
Oh, most definitely. Teach people how not to get hit. We show you that, that moving and getting some hits is entirely possible. The boss man likes to say, and it's true, shooting is easy. If you have the skills to drive a car, you have the skills to be a competent marksman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what you have to do is allow your body to move the way that God intended your body to move.
Now, hang on a second. The boss man, you're talking about Gabe Suarez?
I'm talking about Gabe Suarez.
Yes. And you know what? Hang on to your thought for a second because, you know, moving is important. But I just want to let everybody know that Gabe has written several books. He's got plenty of DVDs out there. The Suarez International classes are taught all over the country and probably in several countries. There is a class near you. Those of you who are in North Texas, the date's going to be May 28th and 29th, and just go to the website. As a matter of fact, I'll put a link in the show posting for this episode and also future episodes as to how to sign up for that class, because as soon as John and I are done talking here, I'm going to talk about, you know, some other things that are going to be going on as far as how I'm going to help promote this class. So I just wanted to throw that in there. So, John, back to moving and making yourself a moving target.
Yeah, make yourself a moving target. Move. Don't be the target. Don't be
right
there. You know, but it's so much more than just that. When we're talking about a 16-hour course, that I mean, bring notebook, bring a pen, take notes. There's a lot of information to fit into 16 hours.
Oh yeah.
But we cover, of course, the shooting fundamentals. We cover movement. We cover immediate action, you know, how to get your pistol back into the fight when it goes click instead of going bang.
Well, that's important.
Oh, I mean, in the middle of a gunfight, it is no time to run a diagnostic on your pistol to find out why it's not working.
That's right.
You know, at Swords International, we teach stuff that the phrase has been coined as caveman simple.
I like,
you know,
that.
You don't want to keep it so simple that it's ineffective, but you've got to have a solid foundation of techniques that are going to work. You know, like I said, running a diagnostic on your handgun in the middle of a fight on why it didn't go bang, it is not the place to do it.
Yeah, let me jump in here. Let me jump in here with something. Folks, you're going to run your guns hard in this class. I promise you. I've taken this course. You're going to run your gun hard. You're going to shoot a lot of rounds in 2 days. Make sure your guns are functioning. Make sure they're well cleaned and well lubricated. And you might want to iron out any problems that you have with your pistols before you come to this class. Because during this class, there's no time to have a problem. If you do, you're going to fall behind.
If there's a problem with the pistol, I'm sure we can get it back into action.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, cleanliness is important, but keeping it properly lubed is of the utmost importance.
So you're going to show them how to get it back in the fight, even if there's a malfunction, aren't you?
Even if there's a malfunction, we can get the pistol back in the fight. The problem you're going to run into is, you know, and Lord forbid, if something breaks during mm-hmm. the fight, you need to have other options.
Right. Bring a backup.
You know, you need to have other options. The immediate action that we do, if you don't have a parts breakage, it'll get your gun back in the fight and get it back in the fight quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's important, and I'm glad you're going to talk about that. Now, explain to them a little bit, without giving away too much of the class, explain to them what you're going to teach them about encountering multiple threats and moving off of the X. Because I like what you said, moving off of the X. There are some people that might not quite know what that means. Why don't you re-explain that?
Moving off the X, once again, is getting out of the way of the muzzle of the bad guy's gun.
Okay.
And really, if you think about it in the terms of movement first and then go for your pistol, it may work out a little bit better. If you try to go for your gun first and then move, you're losing precious time. I mean, it's been shown on average that it takes about 0.25 seconds for a message to go from your brain to your fingertip for that action to take place.
Okay.
The term is often coined to use called the OODA loop.
The OODA loop,
observe,
right.
Orient, decide, and act. Okay, so what you're trying to do is to reset your enemy's OODA loop so that you have time to act while they in turn are now reacting to what you're doing.
Okay, so you're going to teach students.
We do this, you know, what I'm trying to explain is there's two positions or two points that I usually say are bad directions to go in this class, and that is to the 12 o'clock directly at your adversary and straight back, which would be the 6 o'clock, because mm-hmm. neither one of those positions gets you out of the way of the muzzle. But what we look at in this class are our angles and obliques.
Ah.
And how to work those angles.
That's good stuff.
And how your body reacts to going different directions. You know, me being right-handed, going to the right, such as going to 3 o'clock, I can still maintain a two-hand hold on my pistol with no issues.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm going to the 9 o'clock position, if I try to maintain a two-hand hold and point my feet in the direction I'm going, it puts my lower body in a bind with my upper body.
Okay.
To where if I make minor adjustments and switch to a one-hand hold instead of a two-hand hold, I'm able to move quickly and efficiently.
Okay, that's good. So in this course... I'm sorry. So in this course, it seems like that what students are going to get out of this is they're going to learn how to keep themselves away from the muzzle of the bad guy's gun. They're going to learn to move in such a manner that makes them less of a target. But also, I like what you said earlier, John. I like when you said move first, then draw. Don't draw and then move. Again, without giving away too much of your class, why is that?
Well, in the gun culture that you and I are both a part of, mm-hmm. some people tend to believe that their firearm is going to solve all their problems.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case. Your firearm is only a part of the equation to solve a problem.
Very true.
If you stand in one place and begin your draw before you initiate your movement, you're still in the way of, I call it you're a bullet magnet. To where
that's
if,
right.
if you actually start to move first and then access your weapon, it's more fluid. You're actually moving in the direction that you need to go. This is not something to be done blindly, so to speak.
Right. Right. And, you know, I want to remind students, as John is explaining this, you're going to get some training that you just simply cannot get going to a square range, and you can't even get this training going to IDPA or USPSA competitions. I know. I've been through this class, and I'm looking forward to repeating it in May. And, you know, I'm going to repeat this class because I have to learn this again. You know, I really believe that repetition is the mother of learning. And if you don't do this stuff over and over and over again, then it just doesn't sink in. Would you agree, John?
Most definitely, and I would even go further to say that it's not just practice that makes perfect, it's perfect practice that makes perfect.
Ooh, good.
You can't expect to take these techniques and immediately bust out 90 miles an hour off the line and make this stuff work. You know, mm-hmm. you need to take it at your own speed. Roger Phillips is a good friend of mine and fellow staff instructor and a mentor of mine. And I like what he says about slow is smooth and smooth is fast.
Slow is smooth and smooth is fast.
Right. You work the technique slowly and smoothly. The smoother you come, the faster you become.
Okay.
Smoothness is really the key to a lot. Even with your with a draw, which I know you've practiced a draw before. Mm-hmm. You know, we go from a five-count draw to a four-count draw to a three-count draw. And what we're working is the smoothness.
Mm-hmm.
And the smoother you become, the more you flow, and the quicker you become.
And you're going to go over a lot of this in the class.
It all boils down to doing the techniques correctly.
Good point. Good point. Now, I got to ask you a question. I remember in the course, and by the way, I went to the class taught by Glenn Matthews out in Tyler last summer. I remember he spent a lot of time working with us on shooting without sights. Are you going to cover that?
Oh, most definitely. And, you know, look at it like this. It's not unsighted fire. You're using an alternative aiming point. You know, whether it's you're using your hands clasped together in front of the target, using the shape of your slide against the background of your target.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your sights don't get you on target. Your body and the way that you grip your weapon are what puts you on target. Your sights just verify where you're at.
Ah, good point.
You know, at 3 yards, it's no large feat to be able to conduct a smooth draw and to place 3 rounds into the center of the mass of the target without ever addressing your sights.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to teach shooting from retention as well?
Very much so. Shooting from retention, shooting at full extension, shooting, you know, we have the different positions, whether it be compressed, contact ready, and point. You know, and those are all covered actually in the draw stroke itself.
Uh-huh.
So at a close distance, as soon as your hands come together, you know, as soon as your pistol is level, you'd be able to start engaging your target at that point.
Okay, good, good. Now, don't give away too much of the class. I'm glad you're talking about this, but, you know, I want people to come to this class. You know, you can't learn this by listening to John and I talk about it. You really can't even learn it by watching it. You got to show up. So for those of you who are within a couple of hours of driving distance, maybe even 3 hours, this is going to be a very well worthwhile class to come to, well worth your time. You're in law enforcement, aren't you, John?
Currently, yes. I've been a corrections officer. I've been a military policeman in the Air Force. I've been a sheriff. I've been a municipal police officer with a small department in Southeast Texas on a full-time basis. And most recently, I've gone to primarily working for Swords International, and I'm a part-time officer for a small department in Southeast Texas.
Okay, good, good. For someone who's new, who's a new shooter, can they come to this class?
If they understand the basics of marksmanship and safe gun handling skills, they'll do just fine in this class.
Okay. Okay, what would you recommend?
This class is not for someone that has never picked up a pistol before.
I'm glad you said that. You're right. It's not for someone who's never picked up a pistol. Now, what kind of gear do people need to bring for this?
Well, they need a minimum, I would say, 3 magazines, a good sturdy belt, a good quality holster, magazine pouch, a minimum of 700 rounds of ammunition, and that's just a guideline. They need something to write on, they need something to write with, a positive attitude, and lots of water.
Yeah, it's going to be the end of May, and it's going to be in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. It has the potential to be somewhat hot. Memorial Day weekend's usually not too bad, but there have been some pretty warm Memorial Day weekends in this part of the country.
Well, don't let the mild temperatures fool you. You really need to watch your intake on the water. Usually the way I run my classes is, you know, we go solid for 50 minutes and I take a 10-minute break every hour. And, you know, you should be hydrating all the time. So if you are getting to the point where you feel like you're thirsty, you should have already been hydrating.
Okay, that's a good point. When I took it last summer in East Texas, it was well over 100 degrees. It was like in the neighborhood of 104 and 105 at the hottest part of the day each of the 2 days. It was blistering. But we got through it. You know, we hydrated and we took a lot of breaks, and that was a good thing.
Well, yeah, this is a good class. It's a solid class, but it also it's somewhat physical. You know, you don't have to be an Olympic athlete to attend this class, but know that there is physicality involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right about that. There is. But there's going to be some physical stuff going on in a gunfight, too.
Oh, most definitely. You know, and it's part of the overall package that Swords International offers. You know, we look not just at marksmanship and not just at dynamic movement, but mindset, alternative defensive tools, and physical fitness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and see, people have heard me on this show talk about mindset a lot. And folks, this is another reason why I want you to come to this class, because I'm almost positive John's going to go over mindset training as well. And, you know, somebody asked why get training? And my standard response to them was because you can learn a mindset that you really can't learn by going to a square range and plinking.
There's nothing wrong with going to a square range and enjoying an afternoon of planking or basic target shooting, but that is not training.
Yeah, that's right.
Once a week I'll do that, but it's just as someone as a stress relief. even in competition, I compete on a local level, but it is what it is. It's competition. It's not training.
That's right.
What's cool about some of that local competition is that you can take techniques that you've learned in training and actually apply them to the competition.
Right.
Depending on the rules of what organization you're shooting with.
And I've done that. I've taken what I've learned at close range gunfighting and I've applied them at IDPA. I get a few strange looks, but I don't do anything unsafe. And people want to know why I'm doing it that way, because I could be doing it some point a different way that's a lot faster. And I just, you know, nicely explain to them, I'm not here to win. I'm here to practice my self-defense techniques.
It's also a good place to practice your gun handling skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to touch on that, if you would sit back and watch my boss, watch Gabe Suarez handle his firearms, whether it be his Glock or his AK, he operates that weapon with a certain amount of smoothness and confidence.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that is just the sheer amount of dry practice that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll touch on that in class too. I'm a strong proponent of dry practice. You can, you know, spend $300 on a case of ammo, go to the range and blow every last round and get absolutely nothing out of it besides that maybe you've broken your pistol a little bit more or you have a nice little blister on your trigger finger.
Yeah, you know, but, John, I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said dry fire practice, that you're going to cover that, because that's so important.
Dry practice, really to me, is one of the most important aspects of your training. I go so far as to purchase the blue training magazines that allow me to do my reactive and proactive reloads, the training barrels to ensure that you know, I'm not going to put a live round into my pistol. And even through One Source Tactical, we sell a Glock dry practice trigger kit. That if you have any armor skills at all whatsoever, it takes about 30 seconds to install this thing, and it allows you to press and reset your trigger without ever activating your slide. And
yeah,
it's also manufactured to a degree that you cannot fire a live round with this trigger kit installed. and you can sit there and work on your sight alignment, your sight picture, your breath control, your trigger press, your trigger reset, magazine out, magazine in, on the slide. You can do all that without ever firing a live round.
You know, in fact, I'm glad you brought that up. Let me encourage people listening to this. Get that dry fire kit off of One Source Tactical. I think I'm going to go ahead and order one here pretty quick. That's at onesourcetactical.com. Get that and practice before you join us at the course in May.
It makes a world of difference. It makes a world of difference.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you said something a little while ago I want you to elaborate on, if you don't mind. You were talking about... Oh, let's see. I just drew a blank now. Doggone it. I'll get back to that. Let me ask you what I do remember. That's the problem with that's the problem with getting old, man. You forget things.
I'm in the over 40 club myself.
Oh, I'm nearly in the 50 club. So when you get there, it'll be a whole different world opened up to you. Trust me. Are you going to talk about shooting? After action assessments.
That's a very strong portion of the class, and yes.
Okay.
Just because the encounter has occurred and God willing, the bad guy is down, that doesn't necessarily mean the fight is over. Unfortunately, in our times, bad guys don't run alone these days.
Right.
Matter of fact, I just heard a story the other day about a man whose jewelry store was about to be robbed and made national news, if I remember correctly. And he not only was there a bunch of bad guys in the car that he hit, but there was bad guys across the street that were lookouts.
Really?
Yeah, you know, these guys don't run into situations by themselves.
Right.
I guess bad guys like company.
Well,
I got news
sometimes
good guys do too.
Well, good guys do, too, and sometimes the bad guys don't all arrive on the scene at the same time. There could be people across the street that will arrive on the scene seconds later.
You know, and Lord forbid, there could be bad guys behind you. And
That's right.
We teach you how to address that. There's several factors that you have to look at. You know, did it work? Is he down?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is there anybody to his left? Is there anybody to his right? Is there anyone behind me? Am I okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I have to say that was one of my favorite parts of this course, and I'm looking forward to doing it again, is how to deal with threats that might be behind you or to your left or to your right. And, folks, that is definitely something you cannot get training on and you cannot practice if you go to IDPA or USPSA or any of the competitive sports. I'm a huge fan of competition, most of you know, but John and I here are talking about a training course that goes far beyond that.
You know, we even go into the controversial position of Sewell.
Sewell, yeah.
You know, position Sewell. Sewell is Portuguese for south. And we teach you how to do a 360-degree assessment without ever covering any good guys with your muzzle.
Without ever sweeping anybody doing a 360 assessment. That's right, I remember that.
Yeah, we teach different ready positions. It's just a wealth of information. I could talk about this course all night long. You know, there's so much good stuff to cover.
It's your flagship course at Suarez International, isn't it?
I think it's one of the things that sets Suarez apart from a lot of other training regiments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we take it a step further. This is training that I never got as a peace officer. This is training that I never got as a member of the Air Force and security forces. You know, and bear in mind, once again, we're training for a different engagement, going back to the reactive gunfight. You know, as a citizen with the CHL, you're not a police officer. You don't have Motorola on your side, and you don't have backup that's within minutes away.
Right.
You know, you're operating on your own. So that's a whole new dynamic that people have to understand. You're not a cop. Your purpose is to protect yourself and your loved ones. So that's
exactly right. You know, I'm glad you mentioned that, John, that you're going to approach this from, you know, how to teach ordinary civilians how to protect themselves. Because, you know, that's me. I'm an ordinary civilian. I'm not some trainer, or I'm not some law enforcement guy or military guy. I'm just an average Joe on the street that wants to keep myself protected. And that's what I got out of this class, was that, you know, I thought, okay, this is good. This is good for everybody that owns a handgun and carries one to know.
This really helps complete the package for CHL operator. Really helps complete the package. It gives you a well-rounded box of tools to draw from.
Right.
You know, and we always say that the best gunfight is the one that you avoid.
That's right, the one that you don't get into. The one that you don't get into, that's the best
exactly.
one.
Exactly. But going back to being the armed citizen, you know, a lot of things we teach in this class are geared specifically for the armed citizen. One of the things that you'll rarely see us do is throw away a magazine.
Ah.
You know,
that's interesting.
There's a time and a place where you may need to go ahead and dump that empty magazine to get a fresh one in.
Right.
But if at all possible, you need to retain that magazine. Without that magazine, your pistol becomes, you know, a very lightweight bludgeoning tool.
Now, maybe I forgot that part of the course. You're gonna talk about retaining your magazine, how to do it, and why, right?
How to do it and why, exactly. And one of the biggest reasons why is because you don't have anybody to call on to bring you more ammo or bring you more magazines.
Okay. Well, I'm going to be interested to hear your take on that at the course, because I've always wondered when you might find yourself in a situation where you would need to pick up your magazine full of ammo and keep shooting. I would think that if you've shot several rounds and all the threats are removed, that it's pretty much going to be over, but I could be wrong.
Well, you don't know how many threats there are, number one.
That's true, yep.
Number two, if you have gotten to an engagement where you fired several rounds, have you fired three, have you fired nine, do you really know? And this goes back to the after-action assessment. I'll show you at which point in the after-action assessment that you need to get your pistol ready in case you have to engage somebody else.
Ah, now that part I do remember. Yes, I remember that. Okay. Well, this is good stuff. You know, I'd like to do a part two with you at some point, maybe in a few weeks, talk about this some more. But I think this has been pretty good to get people's, you know, interest going and let them know about the course. In closing, in final thoughts, why don't you talk a little bit about why you think people should take this, and then some final thoughts that you might want to share with everybody.
Sure. The reason I think that anyone that is a CHL holder or once prepared for them should take this course is because, like I said earlier, it gives you additional tools to use. It breaks the square range mentality. It gets your mind in a place to where you realize that if things go bad, you know, you can rise to the level of your training.
Right.
Okay. If you don't have training, you don't have the tools, in the middle of the fight is a bad time to try to make a decision.
Right. Or you're going to default to what your training skill is.
Exactly. What your training skill is. And what this course gives you is more than most of the armed professionals out there in Texas today have.
That's a shame.
Let's be honest about this. The handgun on an officer's belt is his second least used equipment on his belt.
Really?
The first least used item is spare magazines.
Okay, and the handgun second. What's the most used item?
Motorola and handcuffs.
I figured you were going to say that. Yeah.
You know, to me, you know, becoming the best fighter that you can be, protect you and yours. You're investing time in you and in your family.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this is all about, is protecting your family, protecting what's yours. If what you have is not worth protecting, then is it really worth having?
You know, and John, I'm so glad you brought that up, because, you know, I'm going to go ahead and borrow a phrase here from Eric Shelton at the Handgun Podcast. You know, several months ago, he said, quit buying guns and get training. And I took that to heart when I heard that show. So I made the same commitment. I quit buying guns and get training. I'm not buying any new guns for 2011. All of my money that I can afford is going to go to training and ammo and getting better with what I have. I have plenty of guns. You know, I'm never going to be able to wear out all the firearms that I have. I just can't.
It'd be nice to try, though, wouldn't it?
It'd be nice to try. Yeah, it would. But 2011 is about training for me. This is not going to be the only course I'm going to take this year. I'll be taking a second one probably sometime in the fall. But I'm glad you said that. And thanks for coming on the show, John. Let's do this again in a few weeks. You want to come back on in a few weeks?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I look forward to doing it again.
Well, thank you for agreeing to come to North Texas, because for some reason, there just doesn't seem to be very many what I consider high-level training classes that come to North Texas. Now, I hope I don't get any hate mail by saying that. You know, my luck, some other trainer in North Texas is going to hear this, and he's going to email me and blast me one. I hope that doesn't happen. But, you know,
well, God willing, we're going to change that trend.
We're going to change that trend. But I got to say, you know, I really like your course. I very much I got so much out of it when I took it, and I'm looking forward to repeating it, because I'm sure that there's going to be something that I'm going to learn in the second time taking this course that maybe I wasn't paying attention to in round one.
Do I have time to touch on one thing that you said?
Sure, go ahead.
You know, about not buying another gun this year, spend that money in training.
Mm-hmm.
For the price of a Glock pistol, you can attend this course.
That's right.
Okay. This course will make you a better shooter.
That's right.
You cannot buy enough toys or new whatever handgun is on the cover of whichever magazine is not going to make you a better shooter.
That's right.
As long as what you have is quality gear, the training is what makes you a better shooter.
Yeah, you know what? You're right.
A more effective fighter.
You know, you're right. You're right. And you're right for the price of a Glock pistol. Actually, less than a Glock pistol. I don't know where you can get Glock pistols for $400. So it's less than that.
Exactly.
You know, come to this class, folks. You know, I know I'm putting the hard sell on some of you when I say this, you know, but you got to come to this class. Quit dinking around. If you haven't been to a good class like this, you won't be disappointed. I promise. I will be there, and I promise that you guys won't be disappointed. I believe in this type of stuff so much that's why I wanted to bring you on, John, and I wanted everybody to hear what actually goes on, and I wanted people to hear my, you know, personal testimonial on it.
Well, I appreciate you bringing me on the show, and just know that if you can't tell, I absolutely love what I do. I have a strong passion for teaching. I enjoy teaching like-minded people. I love the gun culture. You know, in Texas, we have a saying, I'm sure you've heard it before, an armed society is a polite society.
That's right.
And I like polite people.
That's good. That's good. And those polite people, many of them might be armed people.
Hopefully so. Hopefully so. I like being able to take care of myself and mine. And
yeah.
And if one of my students is able to save their life or the life of a loved one, I mean, what better testament is there than that?
Yeah. And
we're in the business of saving lives.
Well, yeah, that's what we're in the business. Well, if it's not, you know, our own life, it might be the life of loved ones near us that happen to be, unfortunately, near us when the crap hits the fan.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
John, thanks a lot. I won't burn up any more of your time. I'm very much looking forward to this course, and I'll be in touch with you shortly. We'll do this again because I'm sure there's some things that maybe you'll think of that you may also want to share with listeners.
Oh, I'm sure. There's so many things that race through your mind when you're trying to put the information out there on what it is that we do. I mean, like I said, I could go on for days about what we do at SI, and I'm very blessed to be a part of the Swordsman National Team. And good core of students and everything. It's a wonderful place to be.
Great. Thanks, John. Okay, folks, this was John Payne, staff instructor at Suarez International. He's going to be the instructor of close-range gunfighting on May 28th and May 29th, just a little bit on the south side of Dallas, Texas. Thanks, John. Appreciate it. And stay safe out there, okay?
Thank you very much. You too.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, many thanks, John, for coming on. I appreciate you talking to us about close-range gunfighting. I'm going to be there, folks. I hope to see you there. I just want to leave you with this. I hope you get some benefit out of these shows. If I help you in any way with your gun handling, your training, your gun selection, your thoughts about concealed carry, your Second Amendment issues, talking about old guns and talking about competition and things like that, the stuff I like to cover on this show. If you don't mind, I'd like to ask you to consider making an investment in my upcoming Shooters Club CD digital download. I'm only going to make version one, which I've been getting a lot of good feedback on, available for about another week, and then I'll be releasing version 2 pretty soon. It's only $15. The proceeds help the very aggressive Second Amendment Foundation. 50% of the proceeds that I get from the sale of this CD or digital download, I'm going to send directly to the Second Amendment Foundation for the excellent work that they do to help protect our Second Amendment rights. So you can do two things. You can support my show, and you can support the Second Amendment Foundation with one investment. Go to handgunworld.com, click the Buy Now button. There's also a link that says Shooters Club CD digital download. A lot of good info that I've never covered on the Handgun World show before. That's it, folks. Thanks again for listening to episode 111. My name is Bob Main. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. See you down the road.